Hey, 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 and welcome to the Weed Out, where we weed out the nonsense and talk about the bullshit happening in our backyard. I'm Spencer Fox Peterson, along with my co-host.
Hi, everyone. I'm Joanna May Booty.
Good to have everybody back. We're reporting here on, beginning of December, first week, just past the colonizer day of quote unquote thanks. And gearing down and getting to winter and just trying to stay positive, just to give context of what's going on in our world. There's a genocide happening in Gaza, and every day nomenclature is being attacked and to confuse everybody. And now, at the Weed Out, we have a lot of things we could talk about, and most of it's down. So I guess today we kind of wanted to, instead of focusing on police malfeasance in our backyard or even the genocide happening on the other side of the world in places like Congo, Sudan, Palestine, and many more, we're going to talk about a universal image of counterculture and revolutionary movements that's been around as long as this creature has been with us. So we're going to talk about cats and how they're the image of anti-fascism and resistance and anarchism, and also a really big green or red flag when you talk to people and how they view animals, but specifically cats. So just follow with us, and we have a point, but we also have personal connections with kitties. I have two cats currently. I had a cat when I was a little younger that has since passed away. So I didn't get introduced to cats until later in my life. I was about 18, 19 before I had my own. But we'll get into that. So Joanna, before we get into our topic for the day, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Like you said, this time of year, I always have to remind myself. It's crazy that I have to remind myself, and I guess I shouldn't use the word crazy, but to me, it's sometimes shocking that I have to remind myself that it's the time of year where things slow down and it's just like this. I think we sometimes talk about this off air, but like if sometimes this time of year at 6 p.m., it feels like midnight. And so we just have to slowly adjust to that. And I'm doing it. I think it's like really helpful lately that it's been mild, but overall doing pretty good considering. And we're talking about one of my favorite things. So that's always fun. How are you?
I'm good. Personally, I'm good. I will be honest with everybody. Every day I'm having existential dread about the traumatizing events and genocidal. I mean, I don't know any other words to say it. And combined with the frustration of seeing language policed. And I know it sounds that rather broad and vague, but historically, wars are fought over information. So being a part of that informational warfare is tiring. So I genuinely am in a good place personally. Things are okay. I'm grateful, but it's hard existing in this world and not knowing what I can do to make it better, and it does take a collective. That's what's being thrown in my face. I feel like we have to get on the same page. So arguing about vocabulary, while I know why we do it, I feel like sometimes it's weaponized so that we're distracting from the real trauma that's happening. And so that's what I'm grappling with. So when you ask me how am I doing, I'm good, but it's a big but.
I totally understand, and I feel like most of the people listening probably do too.
Yeah, and everybody's got their what they're going through and how they're going.
Yeah, life is life.
Yeah, and So anybody that maybe that resonates with, or it seems too completely foreign, it's like we all have, we're all seeing this from our own perspective and our own background. So it doesn't all have to look the same. And I think that's a big part of acceptance and how we get to know our communities and our, the people we surround ourselves with. And the reason we're doing this topic today is because today I had a breakthrough with my adopted cat. We adopted a cat when she was about 6 months old, and she was having a real problem with boundaries and fear. She's like what they call a spirit cat. So she's not quite feral, but you know, she's a domestic cat that has feral tendencies, and really shy, just wants to be hiding. And today she was just like, came looking for me. That was the first time. It's been 9 months. So, radical acceptance is how we got here. Like, you know, not pressing this animal, you know, building a relationship, taking care of its needs, making sure it has water, a clean place to poop, and safe places to sleep away from potential what they consider danger, what I don't consider danger, but what they may consider danger. So it's radical acceptance. And it really feels good that it's like we're making progress, you know, because it was, there has been points over the last 7 months. I'm like, is this cat just going to live in my basement forever? And I, if I want to see it, I have to go down there with food. And you know, right now she's actually sleeping across the way, but today she came looking for me on the main floor where the dog is, who is a terrorist, by the way. He terrorizes anything that moves really quick, and she's afraid. She moves quick. Can't win. And Joanna has also adopted two cats in the last year.
Yes. And I like to say I found them, but yes, I did. I guess I did adopt them, or they're my from birth cats. But yes, I have two cats as well. I did not think that I would have two cats. But the cat distribution system decided that I would have Big Red and Gremulon, the gremlin. So they are now, they were born according to the veterinarian picked their birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's July 13th. So 4 months? I'm so bad.
So they're little kittens.
They're going to be 5 months old on the 13th, on Taylor Swift's birthday, December 13th. I only know that because of some ad that I saw. So everyone cut me some slack. But I was excited that they had that birthday assigned to them, because that is the day that I bought my home with my partner, Caleb, and that is the day that my parents were married. So it's like a cute date.
Oh, fun. So it has lots of...
lots of meaning. And it's their little birthday now. So they're going to be 5 months on the 13th, and they're super cute. They're in the room right now with me. They were also at first... so at first they were feral. Their mother was feral. And I had caught three kittens total. I tried to catch... there may have been more, and I couldn't catch the mom. And you know all of this, but for the audience. And there was a sister, and she was adopted by someone else. But the brothers, Grammy and Big Red, are super bonded, and they snuggle and love each other so much that I couldn't separate them. So I decided to keep them. And at first, they definitely would hiss at me. I don't know if you or Bridget saw Spencer, but sometimes they would definitely hiss and like get upset. They wouldn't want to be petted at all. And the effort I did try, because like there are two thoughts, like with cats like that, like especially if they're small and you're not going to hurt them, to try to handle them as much as possible. And you talked about radical acceptance, and I totally practice that with humans, but I'm like, okay, but these are cats. That type of approach kind of worked with Big Red, because he was just being loud to try to keep, because he was scared. Gremlin was loud because he is like PTSD and like just so scared, like more like mouse, like in the spirit cat, like he could not just be handled and connect as easily. So I've had to wait about 4 months for him to warm up to me, to the point where now he gets really jealous of his brother Big Red, and he wants to be carried around by me. But he hide. They still both hide, like most cats. If anyone but like me or Caleb are in the house, they're very, very skeptical. So like only a few people have seen them.
And just for those at home, we don't do binaries on the Weed Out. So just because we're talking positively about cats and all the imagery, that does not mean we feel any negative towards our four-legged dog friends. And dog.
Oh, no way. Yeah.
Without my dog, I wouldn't be able to have an understanding. My dog taught me the concept of, I don't own, I know legally I own the dog, but like you have to, you, that can, that's the law, and that's written by colonialists. So of course they view things in terms of ownership. No, this dog is part of my squad. He's a partner. It's 50-50. Like, he's got to have my trust, I got to have his trust. That's how we build a relationship, and it takes time. Dogs are a lot quicker. They're a little more simple in their reward centers. And they're loyal, right? But, you know, cats are special because they kind of just showed up one day. And just
that's what mine did.
So, you know, but historically, they kind of showed up. It's not like we actively recruited them.
Yeah.
It with dogs. So they're just an interesting concept of like how to build relationship and consent. And for example, when I said earlier in the episode, we're going to talk about green and red flags. Like, the reason all these incel type bros accuse you being a cat lady online, any sort of reference to cat, and it imply in their head it implies weakness or like untrustworthiness or something. And it's really funny that they're like, that's like in their gut. In these like weird incel right winger mindsets, doesn't have to necessarily be incel, but it's like it is tied to misogyny.
Oh,
it is code for misogyny.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, you're gonna be a lonely cat lady, for example. The reason
it's like, hello, I have cats, I'm not alone.
The
or
reason
lonely.
They don't like cats is cats don't deal with in terms of coercion.
No. And they need you to be patient and quiet. Usually they need a lot. They need a lot from you.
They have to be allowed to be autonomous, even though, so you have to kind of trick a cat in a way. Like my cats are prisoners. Like, let's be real. Like
they are. I feel the bad about that.
And like, they don't have freedom to go in and out. I allow them out, one of them outside, but I allow them. So it's like, you know, they're prisoners. Let's be real. And, it is for their own safety, but you are kind of like, there's no direct coercion. Like, you kind of maybe got to trick the cat into thinking, or just treat them so good that they don't want to leave, right?
I think that's where mine are at. Plus the food. Yeah. They are very, some cats, not all, like one of mine is way more food oriented, but that's definitely a big one for them. I mean, you know,
humans are food. I'm food oriented.
Yeah. They're, but I mean, just like one of them is much more manipulative.
I think it's like food. A dog. In food. Dogs and food. It's like,
I don't know.
There's something wired, and it's probably because of our fucking with their genetics. They're wired to be really, really concerned that I gotta stick where the food is because I don't ever want to feel that pain, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, cats, they're wild, and I couldn't have got to this journey without my dog. So we're not anti-dog here. No,
we like all animals.
Of course, we love all animals. They all have something to teach us, and we work with them. We don't own them. We're compadres. So just the reason there's a red flag is because you can't coerce them. You can't, they will let you know, I don't consent to something, pretty readily, either by scampering and climbing really fast or swiping or some combination of both.
Yeah. Or hissing and swiping. Yeah.
I mean, you could see videos online of domestic house cats like swatting at bears. Like, they do not give a fuck.
No, they're little toughies. That's a thing. I did win my kittens over though with food, but you're right. Like, I would have to literally put food on my hand and then pretend that I was like looking at my phone or watching TV and that pretend that I didn't notice they were there. And then they would come over even to get food off my hand. But it was like, they're so interesting as an animal and learning to trust you and stuff. It's so cute.
And so women, and we, I brought misogyny and cats and all that coding and stuff. You can go back to, like, you know, the early colonial days in America, the 1600s, when they're doing all the witch hunting, and the association of cats with the types of women that would be called witches. These types of women were usually very in tune with nature and their surroundings, and they understood animals, and they didn't try to have dominion. So that was a red flag to these patriarchal societies, somebody that's rejecting man's dominion over nature and living with it. So they associated these women that wanted to be one with earth, essentially, you know, in rejecting patriarchal values, probably not wanting to get married to some man because her father said so or whatever. All the reasons they got associated with witches, right? But it's also associated with anti-fascist movements. Anti-fascists have used their image since the beginning of anti-fascism.
Well, and all cats are beautiful, so.
Oh, yeah, ACAB. And, you know, there's a reason you never see drug sniffing cats.
Yeah, know. They wouldn't do that nonsense.
They're not narcs. And
well, and I feel bad for dogs because I feel like it's gross. And not even I feel it's like animal abuse. And no, oh, they're not effective.
Oh, even the drug sniffing dogs, like, assuming you're not using them as a weapon, like, you're exposing a dog regularly to substance.
Drugs. Potentially, like, yeah, it seems so bad.
I'm sure they argue that, like, you know, it's somewhat safe, and it's like, I don't know.
But they're also trained to, like, harm you by, like, command too, which I don't know. Like, knowing animals, like, I'm not like an animal expert, but I know enough about them. Like, you think you really have a dog trained only to attack you when they say so? It just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, and there was a viral video last week, so the end of November 2023, of a canine handler punching his dog and the dog attacking him while they were
good for the dog. What the fuck?
But, like, these men abuse those animals, and this is a sidebar about cats, but just, we're talking about animals, and they shouldn't be used as weapons,
period. At all.
And
they're helpless little creatures.
Yeah, but you don't see cats being used in those various forms.
No, they're way harder to, like, quote unquote train, like you said too.
Yeah, and cats are just interesting. Like I said earlier, I didn't grow up with cats. Like, I mean, I had neighborhood cats, like my friends had cats, but and I always liked them, but it wasn't, I got basically kind of one fell in my lap. The second one I had came with somebody else. Like, Bridget brought Henry with her, and now this third cat, Mousy, I call her Mousy because she was quiet and wanted to hide, and I was like, she's like a little mouse, and she looks like a little field mouse. She's all brown and, you know, rock colored.
She's so fluffy though.
Oh yeah, she's a floof. She looks bigger than she is, but she has does. Like a similar spirit to my first cat, also named an animal name, Monkey.
Monkey, so cute.
Monkey lived up to her name. She was a climber and pretty fierce and a fighter. They're different in the sense, like, Monkey, the cat that has since passed away, she had really sharp claws, like, and she sharpened those things, like, she was sharpening shanks, and she used them, like, she didn't know how not to use her claws. She's the only cat I've ever known like that. Like, she just did not know how to, even when she was being lovey, she did not know how to not use her claws. This cat, Mousy, doesn't really use her claws, even when she wants out of a hold or something, you know. Our elderly cat, Henry, Bridget's cat, he, that man, he'll swipe at you. He don't give a fuck. he's a bully. But, you know, enough about my cats. Cats are just funny. Like, I had a cat, literally, I was at work a couple months ago. The door was open, and I'm, like, finishing up for the day, putting the keys away and putting all the stuff away, wrapping up the day. And a fucking cat just appeared. A neighborhood cat just was in the office, just wandered in, walking around like he'd been there before. Like, he owned
They're so quiet. So it's like, oh, hi.
And like, he came over, rubbed me on my leg. And I was like, I'm going home, dude. You can't stay here. And he just followed me out. And I was like, where are you? Like, do I got to find your house? And he just was like, looked at me and just walked off between the buildings. I was like, oh, okay. I guess he knows what he's doing.
Oh my gosh.
And like, totally house cat, like, or indoor, outdoor, whatever. Not feral or weird at all. Just
visit. He was just visiting.
But again, radical acceptance, man. If you can get along with a cat and get a cat to like you, you probably have a good handle on consent. So those, anybody that says they don't like cats reflexively, fucking red flag, maybe don't hang out with them.
I know. And I feel like it's a green flag if, as a cis straight woman, who if men don't like cats, you're right. Like, I think it's, I'm always like, oh, no, thank you. If they're allergic, I get it. But like, if you're not allergic and you don't like cats, it's kind of weird.
I'm talking about a very specific sort of.
Me too. No, there's a type of person.
I'm about to say, even like, I can get, I'm fine with people to be like, yeah, I wouldn't want one. I don't want to do that.
I get it too. There's certain things. Like I said, I didn't think I would get two more. I didn't think I'd ever have two.
Like cleaning the litter box. It's not a great.
I hate it. The worst.
And, you know, also if like you live in a small apartment in the city, I know that's like cats are good at pets and that, but it's like that. I had a cat in the city in an apartment and I always felt bad about it.
Yeah, me too. And for the smaller apartments I had with my old kitty Leo, I had him for 12 years. I felt bad for him. He moved with me so much because I was younger, but he lived a good life. But I know what you mean. So yes, I've been around cats though since like I was a baby probably. So I've always had.
And it's to my knowledge, I could be wrong. So anybody listening at home, if you have any information that disputes this, I've never known any fascist right wing leaning imagery to have cats in it. Eagles, yes. Eagles, red flag. but cats, I've never seen cats in right wing imagery. Seen it in a ton of left wing imagery.
I don't think so either. Another interesting fact is that cats, you'll see them in a lot of imagery when you're looking at, if you do see some of the video coming out of Gaza.
Yep.
Because Muslim people believe that cats are a holy animal and they're allowed, they're the only animals like, and people like, you know, like non-Muslim practicing individuals, they're allowed to be with them in temple and they're allowed on their prayer mats too. So you'll see like a lot of the children or like people in videos like carrying their family pets or like taking care of cats. And usually that's why, because they really, they consider cats to be like very special and holy.
Which makes sense. I mean, being neighboring Egypt, and Egypt has a long history of respecting and revering cats, you know, like Northern Africa. Tons of those images around, like the Sphinx, even just like, we're talking really rudimentary history here. Nothing even that crazy. Like,
I know, I'm just like, they make sense to want to think they are so,
you know, cute. Why that rule is there. Because you can't so stop a cat from going on your prayer mat no matter what you do, or else you'd have to do something that probably is against your tenets of belief, like harming them. Because the only way you're stopping them is to harm them.
Well, I think, supposedly, I know you're completely right, but supposedly it's because of how clean they keep themselves.
Sure. Hey man,
whatever the reason they came up with, reason
because of the cause, like they're free. Oh, well, you know, cats, they are clean, they keep their butthole clean, you know. Like,
I know, I'm just like, oh, I'm just still like, you licking it though. So, but I get why they think they're,
that's what I'm saying. It's just like, that's just a convenient excuse.
I know, I agree. White ladies can compare though, like whenever you try to do yoga and you're with a cat, they just always want to be on a mat too. So you're right. It's better to just come up with an acceptance, a reason for acceptance.
You know, it's the only animal that can tear up your house with their claws for stress relief. And we just go,
I know. I was telling you, like, when we weren't recording, I've Gremlin especially has taught me even more patience and just acceptance of what it is, like is what it is. I used to never like to decorate for the Christmas season, but I do after having an accident a few years ago. And I'm just letting the audience know for context. So now I like to have a tree and like lights so it feels cozy. And Gremlin also loves the tree, but he likes to climb it and or knock it over. So he knocked over the tree. I thought maybe like a bigger one would work, but that's just become like a nest and he can climb like 2/3 of the way up. But the tree is now just incredibly incredibly weird looking, and it's just gonna have to stay that way. But he lays in it for like an hour at a time some days, and the sound you made is exactly it. Spencer, I'll just be like, oh, okay, yeah, there's Graham, and it's just kind of like, I can't do anything about this. So, and Big Red is an orange cat. So to everyone out there who knows about orange cats, Big Red is he's a standard orange kitty, but he's also not a standard at all. So it's so amazing.
Big gregarious doofus. That's the orange cat.
Oh, he is, and he just always like meows to be held, and then like is so like uppity too. He's just a crazy little monster, but I love him.
Yeah, I've never met an orange cat I don't like.
I know you've said that. I didn't know that about orange cats, that they were different. But I will say the cutest part about these two, my cats, Big Red and Gremulon. Big Red was willing to trust me first. Like one cold morning, when he was a little munchy, he came up to me and wanted to be snuggled. And I was like so happy. I was afraid to touch him at first because I usually pretended that they like didn't exist. But he like let me hold him and snuggle him. And ever since he's been like that. But then I would always try to sneak in when he was snuggling his brother. So he totally got me an in with Graham. So it's like, it's cute. It's just so cute how like animals have different personalities too. Like your mousey is so different. And so is Henry.
Oh yeah. They're all so different. And dogs too. Like all and you know,
oh yeah.
Spirits, cows and pigs. Too. Like they
totally
all have their own unique personalities. Some more blend in with the crowd than others, but there's always at least a couple that stand out with unique personality traits. And I mean that from barnyard animals to it's just like humans. There's a lot of you know, there's a lot of kind of blend in with the crowd humans. And I mean that in the most like non-offensive way. You know, it's not a bad thing. Like in some ways I blend in with the crowd, you know. Yeah, especially being a white guy in America.
Yeah.
So you know, this conversation was kind of impromptu, so we kind of winged it today, everybody, and maybe we shouldn't be peeking behind the curtain, but here at the Weed Out, radical transparency. And we just also wanted an excuse to share a little bit about our lives while staying on topic, you know, and talking about maybe a broader concept of revolutionary thought. And there's a lot of awful going on.
Yeah.
And one thing is there's always been a lot of awful going on. That doesn't excuse what's going on now. It doesn't give us a reason to numb ourselves, but we do have to find joy every day. So even if it's something as small as your relationship with an animal, because relationships with animals are very pure, you know, they're very based on consent, based on trust, based on boundaries. You know, when you find out your cat doesn't like being pet on the belly, you don't pet him on the fucking belly anymore. Some cats like it, you know, and it's good. It's just petting an animal or being friends with an animal. It's just like touching grass, right? Like, and I don't mean that in the insulting way. I mean, we got to ground ourselves. And we got to remember that struggles have been going on a long time. There's a reason these images and these relationships with these animals have stood the test of time. And there's also a lot of information you can glean from people to decide, That's an interesting data point about you. If they don't like cats, or if they do, or if you see them interact with a strange cat and they're like, oh, hey, kitty, you know, and like just kind of keep moving. That's a lot of information you can learn about people in a short time. At least I know that's what I use as my data points. I call it collecting data points. Doesn't mean a passive judgment saying, oh, this person doesn't like cats. They must be an asshole. No, but it keeps me aware of potential, like, you know, let's pay a little more attention to how they treat service workers. You know, how they talk about people when they're not around.
I know.
So, yeah, I mean, radical acceptance, radical transparency. Cats are the anarchists of our animal human relationships, and we love them for it. So that's pretty much the thoughts on that concept today. And as always, we have ghoulery and tomfoolery. Like, we can't do an episode without it. It's almost like
it's so true. Can I make a plug though? So because it's the cold season, yeah, and we're talking about these, if anyone in Western Mass has the ability and the like space and time and money to take in a cat or a dog or any type of pet, I have looked at a lot of the local shelters. So in the Berkshires and all throughout the Connecticut River Valley, there are a lot of animals that need homes. So if you are someone like us who loves animals, please consider during the cold season giving your family a new member. That's if you don't know where to look, please reach out to us at theweedout@gmail.com. I would be happy to help you.
That's a great idea. Like I said, like any difference you can make in the world, because then the world may not see you being kind to an animal, but that animal gives you energy back, and that's good. It's a way to recharge your battery. And like, I'm not some hippy dippy about all this, but I just noticed it over time. Like, things are better when you're kind to animals. Just, you know,
you're definitely not. So for the audience, you definitely are not hippy dippy about this, but you're very kind to animals. So, and I think people can be that way. Anyone can. Animals don't require you to be anything, but like you said, like, give them trust, let them trust you and be kind.
Yeah, for the crowd at home, I make my living off of dead animals. And that sounds dark.
This is why I'm saying you're not hippy dippy about it.
Yeah, but I like, it is heavy.
No, it is. It is, but we eat meat. I mean, we don't necessarily eat cats or dogs here in the U.S., but we do eat meat. So some people do, some people don't. That's it for another episode. Yeah.
And food production is a necessary part of life.
Totally.
Fishermen, we're always going to have guys driving the trucks. I don't work for Cisco, so that's good. You know, and I used to be a butcher, and I worked with farmers and worked with a small butcher shop and, you know, a family-owned butcher shop. So it's a little different, but you do feel the weight of those, like, quite literally, you feel the weight of the sacrifice made by that animal.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't want one more morsel to not be used for anything. Like, and the failure you feel when you fuck something up or waste something, whether it goes bad because of bad rotation, whatever reason, doesn't sell. It feels really, I know I feel it really, really personally. Like, I wouldn't want any fish on my truck to ever go to waste, you know? So, because I know how important that life was, how important it is to sustain life. So that's how I feel like when I interact with animals we don't necessarily eat, like our domesticated pets, it's all the more reason to treat them like exalted ones, because we can't eat every animal, but we can have relationship with Earth.
I love it.
I don't know. It's complicated.
No, it's so good.
It's complicated.
It's true. We can't. It's complicated, but it's also like, it's true.
And you cannot be this. This is no shot at veganism. I got no problem with vegans. I love your food. Like, I eat vegan food. You know, I need meat, unfortunately. I mean, I'm a diabetic, and protein is like the name of the game. So meat's gonna have to stay in the diet if I'm gonna stay healthy. I need fat, and I need diverse versions of it. So I'm gonna eat meat. I'm gonna eat beans. Like, but I can't live on a bean only diet. It's a bad idea. And so yeah, no, but like the militant veganism who like can't see the middle ground. It's like, come on, man, what the fuck are we doing here? But yeah, being in the meat purveying business really makes you realize how precious life is.
Totally. I mean, so I've mentioned it in other episodes, but I grew up on a small farm. So at first growing up, I knew like very young that like if our once certain animals were gone, like they were food.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're food.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
and it didn't like, because it was normalized to me, it didn't like, it doesn't upset me to this day, because I know if, as long as animals are used in the way that you're talking about large agriculture, though, I would like to let everyone know large, like meat interest and like large meat business and like big business for me is very upsetting. And you mentioned Cisco. So like big business with food is, I don't know how we avoid it because of so many things. It does make me sad for the animals in those situations.
Oh, I could do a whole mini series.
Right. Yes.
Just my knowledge alone. Like, I am not the forefront expert. But I have some anecdotal experience with multiple systems, whether it's big corporations or the regulatory bodies, where you're just like, this is fucking stupid. Like, this doesn't, this is like, different episode. I don't want to get too sidetracked. So if anybody ever wants to hear about that, please let us know. If you want to hear my critique of our food system, I have some thoughts. I'm not saying I have all the answers, but I could tell you where some of the fucking problems are.
For sure.
Dealing with it firsthand. And number one is the pay. The pay across the board. Doesn't matter what you're talking about. The pay's got to be fixed. And yeah, and for profit food sales, like, fuck.
I was gonna say that's the major issue, actually. Yeah.
So disgusting. Sure, we got to cover our costs. Fine, but like for profit, this is disgusting. It's inhumane. This is somebody that works for people that technically do make profit. Like, sorry guys, if you're listening, like, this is a problem. Like, we shouldn't be depleting our food sources and also not sharing the wealth made. I don't know. And it's a necessary need. It's a basic need, you know.
It is.
So anyways, sidebar. Back to the episode at hand.
Cat.
Thank you for everybody for listening to us about cats. We're gonna do a quick ghoulery and tomfoolery. And we're staying local, of course. Like, let's go to our favorite city. Northampton, Massachusetts, halfway.
Oh, I was like, I was like, which one?
Oh yeah.
I had three or four ideas of it.
All our favorites. So this was ghoul.
That's why I'm like, I have so many favorites.
Excuse me one second. I fucked my mic.
Big Red is like 5 feet, like 3 feet from me, laying on a blanket, looking so cute. And he doesn't want to move. But I want to snuggle him. That's my thoughts on cats. I know. I keep looking over at him like, come here, little buddy. I can tell he can hear me because their little ears move even when they're sleeping.
Oh, yeah. They're never sleeping.
I know. Sometimes I feel like they are, though.
Thank you for your patience for letting me fix my microphone.
Yeah, you're good. I'm watching my little nugget.
All right, so finally, our ADHD butts are going to get on some news here. Some ghoulery and tomfoolery. Northampton, Mass., our favorite faux progressive city. Probably the most technically progressive city in Massachusetts, but...
Mate, one of.
Yeah. but it's full of shit. So that's for hope anybody in Northampton city government hears this, you're all full of shit. Anyways, so we're gonna start with the news from the shoestring. Dusty Christensen reporting today, December 4th, Northampton settles police excessive force case for $75,000. Joanna, do you have that link? Did I share that with you?
Yeah.
I'm going to pull the article up here.
Okay.
Cool. So, yeah. Yeah. Northampton settles excessive police force case for $75,000. City's insurer will pay an Amherst resident who alleged Northampton police beat and pepper sprayed him during a wellness check in 2019. So, as you can see, that's a hilarious fucking...
the photo option for this is like, all right.
Shoestring, that is...
hilarious. I know, it's interesting.
Because like they're doing the copaganda thumbnail, and this is like my pet peeve. Putting a cop car in the handle, like in the thumbnail online news sources is like, that's like the go-to for every news source. It could be like children slain and gunman kills everybody in school, and it will have a picture of a police cruiser like in a scenic sunset. And it's just like it's a mental thing associating with police. And you know, Shoestring is a legitimate news source. So this is their funny way of throwing shade. I think that's hilarious because they're doing it. But
it's like an old photo of like the Deck the Halls. Yeah.
A Christmas bow patrol car here, a car with a Christmas bow on it as their thumbnail. And it's about Northampton's excessive force case.
It's like hilarious.
If that's on purpose, guys, kudos, Dusty and the Shoestring.
It's thanks for the laughs.
Yeah, I mean that's how we.
Either way, hooray.
Some people may see it that way. So the city has reached a $75,000 legal settlement with a man who accused Northampton police officers of violating his civil rights during a 2019 arrest. In a lawsuit filed last year, Amherst resident Jennison Retzlaff. Excuse me if I mispronounce that, had alleged in 2019 he was in the Meadows section of Northampton when somebody called police and said he looked, quote, kind of out of it.
Which is insane to have someone like that, like taste.
That's not against the crime. That's not against the law, by the way.
I know. If I look kind of out of it all of the time. No one should be pepper sprayed for that.
What the fuck does that mean? Retzlaff said that.
That's what I'm saying.
And EMTs first arrived on scene and determined he didn't need medical assistance. But after they left, the police showed up. He alleged when he tried to get his ID back from them so he could leave, the officers tackled him to the ground, kicked him, beat him with a baton, and pepper sprayed and arrested him.
Awful.
In a court filing on September 9th, presumably 2023, Retzlaff and the city agreed to settle a case rather than proceed to a jury trial. That means it was going to go badly for them. And although the agreement does not specify the total settlement amount, city attorney Alan Seawald informed the Shoestring that the amount was $75,000. Retzlaff's attorney, Michael Henneman, declined to comment on the settlement. So did Mayor Gina Louise Ciara. Like many municipalities, Northampton handles such lawsuits through its insurance provider, the Massachusetts Interlocal Insurance Association. That means that settlement money doesn't come directly from the city's coffers. However, such settlements could result in taxpayers having to pay higher insurance premiums going forward. This is a well-written article. It goes on to talk about the specifics of the case. And I'm sorry. Like, the police, they know no other way than to escalate situations. Right. Even in Northampton, the progressive city where they do community policing and what's that Minority Report type shit Chief Jody Casper call, preventative policing, whatever that shit is. And
her own Minority Report.
Yeah. No, we live in the dumb age. Like, words mean nothing anymore. They just say things like, this is community policing. It means contact points. This person was dealt with. The city responders
already assessed them.
Already assessed it and moved on. And the police they get graded on how many contacts they make in community policing programs in some fashion. Maybe I'm not describing it directly, but like we heard about that cop in Egremont, Mass, that Andrew Quimier talked about a long, long time ago. He sees his job as creating as many contact points for the public to find the crime. Yeah. That is with the assumption that there's crime rampant everywhere. It's just a matter of numbers. That's like a disgusting way to govern.
It's just such projection coming from cops. It's like, okay, look within yourselves. Pick up a mirror.
Needed something to, like, it was a slow night or some bullshit.
Oh, for sure.
And they were like, well, we haven't done anything all night. And like, there was nothing out of this. Maybe the guy gave him some attitude. Maybe pulled his ID hard. I don't know. Like, you know, like little micro rushes that, hey man, I'm not pleasant being pulled when I'm interacting with agents of the state that have guns. I'm not unpleasant. But
if someone is unpleasant though, I understand it. That's why these community care and like, especially someone who's having a hard time mentally, like I feel like, I think Rachel Miore is quoted in this, and she's the Ward 7 counselor in Northampton. And I will say, like, shout out to Rachel, who is always someone who is at least looking for alternatives to the police and really stands behind the community in that respect. And she did talk about how it's quoted, "I'm glad the Division of Community Care is now up and running and moving forward can prevent situations like this case is just further proof of our new division with its responder team is a wise investment in our city." And I think that we say this all the time, like people have to look at these things as investments in our community. Like the police are not helping, they're costing money. And it's not wrong to assess something when it's not working and say it's costing you $75,000. It's not wrong to assess it and say, you know, maybe we should have put another $75,000 in the Department of Community Care. And well, that would have prevented this from ever happening.
Just for argument's sake, the $75,000 being paid out by the insurance company, so that's not necessarily $75,000.
But you know what I'm saying?
But if you keep having...
if you keep having those incidents, your taxes are going to go up either way.
And like, this is like, at some point, if that's the case, if that's the system, why do we have insurances? Because it's just like, well, the insurance is just going to pay out. This sounds like fucking some sort of money.
I was going to say, the insurance thing is actually weird and shady to me. And I think all insurance is, so.
The money should come directly.
I'm having a hard time with that.
The money should come directly from the police. They should have to pay for that shit.
I agree.
You know, violated the civil rights. However you want to fucking word it. And this is what I was saying earlier episode during the cats part. Like, what is the law? It's a fucking set of rules that are arbitrarily written by fucking drunk frat boys from 1700s. All right. Like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, how do you own a cat? How do you own a dog? Like,
they're your family members.
How come insurance companies, a third party, are paying out for the malfeasance of the police, and the police get nothing taken away? And if anything, they get these cushy, stupid training programs to go fuck off and collect double time because they do it at the same time they're working, or like they just double up in their week and they just take home a shit ton of money. Like,
or they retire, like in the episode about Captain Reyes at 48 after being accused of sexual assault and harassment at work. Like, it's just, that's why when people think we're being outrageous about these like problems with the police, like, we're not. The things we're talking about are outrageous.
Not to like...
outrageous.
Not to be like silent gen conservative guy, but the dollars and cents don't make sense. Like,
You may have silent gen vibes once in a
while. Like, I hate my grandfather, who would probably be cool with the cops because he probably was like, you know, cool with white supremacy culture and fine with them beating up on black people. Like, I don't doubt it, but he would go, but you guys cost us more money than you protect us from losing.
Absolutely. Exactly. That's what I was always taught. Like, these motherfuckers cost us money. So like, I was always taught this, not to involve the police.
But. And I want to ask these, like, when I get government, I'm going to run it like a business. Like the presidential candidate, Dean Phillips, that's running in the Democratic primary. He said something like, I think it needs to be run more like a business. I've been in public service and I've been in private sector. It should be run like a business. And like, and if that's the case, yo, then why is the Pentagon failing its sixth
Yeah, the auditing
in a row
thing,
and they keep getting raises. You're not incentivizing them to do the right thing by business logic. Your fucking precious capitalist logic.
Well, I would say in that respect, please. Well, I would say in that respect, if someone were going to come in and hopefully audit them and treat it like an actual business, I would be like, dear God, try. Please try. Because $4 trillion going missing is, it makes, I'm literally getting angry and my blood pressure is rising thinking about it currently. And the fact that other people don't is nuts.
What happens at the Pentagon is happening on the local level too.
That's every year too. That's every year though. That's every year.
I would love to see how much, when, because now if we add up all the police, domestic police in the United States, it's the third largest military in the world if we add up the budgets.
Yeah.
Cost, right? So if we add all that up, could we also add up, would their losses that they can't account for, their misdeeds as a total, as a countrywide thing, do you think it would rival or exceed what the Pentagon has done?
So hard to say, because think about like how stupid most cops are and how poorly, like, the, when we look for records, and not to be an asshole, but like when we look for public records, or we have people like Andrew, who's an ex, Andrew Quimier, who is basically a public records expert on, you will find that the records keeping is either terrible or not even there. So like, how can we even trust that they're, you know, using a receipt and keeping track of what they're spending at any point? Like, that's why when like they're allowed to see,
came and do two sets of books, right?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, the, they're probably not even, we could probably easily find out if they were cooking the books, if police would even let you hold them accountable, because it's probably, they're not good at it, I'm sure. But think about things like in Massachusetts, like public, what is it? Like, they can do seizure of our personal belongings and cash and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, who knows how they keep track of that or spend that too?
Oh, they use it in their illicit, like, entrapment schemes.
It's so shady, but they take money, whatever, you know?
Yeah, that all ends up in individual. So I wonder, just like, that's just a thought experiment. Anybody at home? I'm not a math guy. I'm sure there's a way you could guesstimate by, like, we know, have a rough idea how much the Pentagon has lost.
Yes, that's ridiculous.
Because we've added up all the budgets. So I'm sure we can figure out all the losses too, or the confusion.
Well, exactly.
Historically fucked up. Like, where it's, we're so at, everybody, there has never been a more corrupt enforcement mechanism and like systematically built than our policing system. And it's built in a way where it's decentralized, which plays in their benefit.
It does. When
outside cops come in, they still think like cops and they still give cops benefit of the doubt. So they may not look as hard, right? But then they can find their really obvious shit, make an example of somebody like Derek Chauvin, right? Make an example of them. And then the other 8 out of 10 cops are still doing fucked shit. And this is the genius of it. It's like they're also, all of them are incompetent. The type of person they hire are incompetent.
I mean, yeah, they can't. So that's why it's hard. Like, I would love for someone to, like you said, like, do a report on what they think the amount of money we lose is. And again, my blood pressure rises as I think about it. But I think it would be hard to fully grasp. So it would probably be like a guesstimate. And I think it would still be really upsetting.
Right.
Really, really upsetting. Think of some contracts we've talked about in past episodes, even like where you just show up, like you've said, like if you get overtime, I may have been Holyoke's contract, but it could have been a Greenfield contract. But it was like one of the towns locally where if you just show up for after your regular hours, you get paid 4 hours of overtime, like just stuff like that. And I know that's in their contracts, but it is kind of like taking money from a community too, if it's taxpayers' money. Think about how much we all pay in taxes. I think during a time where we all can understand and see struggle and like how hard it is to just get by, when you think about how much money that we put into taxes and then how it's then utilized to help our communities, I think it's something we should be aware of, and we should be asking for more transparency about in every single way.
And while that information would be great and helpful, I need everybody listening. Like, you got to talk to your friends. You got to talk to your neighbors. Like, this stuff is absurd. It's so absurd. And like, Joanna and I are not even experts. Like, we are not even experts. Like, we're 5% through the information, like, in the grand scheme of abolition, because there's things that are happening currently that you have to pay attention to. Like, you know, for example, they're using AI at protests in New York City with drones to collect people's images. So please mask up. It's good for COVID. It's good for the flu. It's good for allergies. And it's good to not get fucking identified by the state because you're using your free speech. And that goes for all free speech users. I don't give a fuck what you're saying. Like, these governments are out of fucking control. This is out of control. I don't care what you're like, what's where you're at in the paradigm. 99% of us, this government has too much power. It's run amok, because if they come after trans people, they come after people speaking out about Palestine, and they have these AI driven spyware tech, and they can put you in these buckets. And it's all coming from Israel, by the way. They're the ones that developed all these tools. Like, it's all so obvious. And Joanna and I, again, correct me if I'm wrong, like, you and I are like maybe 5% down the rabbit hole of what abolition means.
I can put like a number on it, and I don't, but
I just know there's so much more.
There's so much more than what I feel like I know a little bit more than 5%. I think you do too. But I do know what you'd like to, I do want everyone to know that we are not experts, and I completely agree with the sentiment that there is so much to learn and so much more to learn. That, yes, we're not any sort of expert at all. No. However, like, I will say that we're both passionate, and we're both people that read a lot of very factual information. I'm someone who, personally, with a background in like research and data analyst work, I really think, and Spencer has a communications degree, so I think, and that wouldn't matter, but I think both of us also have such a sense of justice and an inquisitive mind that we came to this place at different times in our lives, but we, of course, have so much more to learn, because I think we do this until we free us, and that is a book. But we keep doing these things over and over because the systems sometimes do change. They just don't change necessarily the way that they need to. And there are small dents that have been made along the way. And there are small things that we learn about that we, you know, that may have impact our neck of the woods, but we may not hear about things, you know, like the Palestine issue, the genocide in Palestine, not an issue, is terrible, but there's also a genocide occurring in the Congo. And there are other places, that we just aren't hearing about that either. So I think we all have like these echo chambers that we get into as well. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But yeah, no, I don't think we're experts at all. If people have book ideas or things that they'd want to share with us, I'm always so open to that. We collaborate with a lot of local people and groups to try to learn more. But yeah, I don't know if I'd say 5% though. for me, that's like, we're like, it's hard because I shouldn't want to grade things, but my mind is programmed to be grading, and I'm like, 5% is such a bad grade, Ben.
I just know I don't know. I don't know what I don't know.
I know. I agree. That's there's a lot. It might only be 5%, and I have to accept that if it's true. But
hey, man, 5 years ago, I was all about putting cameras on cops. Like, if we can't abolish them, put cameras on them. And it's like, nothing changes. Because if you put them on the cameras, they're still trained, the person's still beaten, and maybe they get an insurance payout through this absurd system later. Like, the cameras are just a waste of our time.
I know, but like, that's why I said what I said, because at the time when you know, and there's now 10 or 15 years worth of like data to show how that, but I also wanted at like, you know, 10 years ago for police officers to be wearing cameras, and until you see the data and what's happening, you think you're making a dent and like creating accountability, not on you. And I get it. I can understand why people wanted that, you know.
Well, it's like
yourself included. I can understand. It makes sense.
Ultimate it's centrist thinking. It's moderate thinking. Let's compromise. The fascists want to keep the
well.
Fascists.
What can you? Yes, but what can we? You know, normally, what can we do? So
the oppressed don't. They want accountability. So let's slap a camera on them. And, you know, some third party is making a shit ton of money selling cameras, which means mining precious resources from the Congo to give cops these battery using. It's all connected. Like I sounded like Charlie in It's Always Sunny. Pepe Silvia.
Pepe Silvio. Right?
Because like.
You did. You even made the hand gestures.
Technology requires batteries, right? So drones, all this shit, the lenses and all that stuff are made out of precious mines, minerals and resources, and they're being pulled from the global south where these genocides are happening, where they're also developing the spyware to spy on us. So like we need, not only we've had our victories, but like, dude, we gotta get, there was a time pre-Patriot Act where none of this shit would have been allowed.
Exactly.
We did have this at one point. It wasn't just that technology didn't exist. We had rules. Like, no, you can't do that.
and Europe, they do. Like, the GDPR in the EU is so much more protective of your person. America, the Patriot Act is the beginning of the surveillance. Like, of the end of us having any kind of privacy from the surveillance state. And they just keep renewing it. Obama renewed it. He could have let it run out and expire, and he just renewed it, and they just keep renewing it.
Yeah. As long as there's a conflict going on somewhere, they're going to renew it, because
I know. I actually hoped back in the day, like, I was like, oh, he'll let it run out. That's awesome. Like, the Democrats will do that. No, they won't. They will not.
So let's talk about the recurring cycle. So you have Al-Qaeda, which led to Iraq, Afghanistan, whatever, trying to root out terrorism, war on terror, created ISIS, which is another reason to reintroduce the Patriot Act. And then you got another situation in Gaza where you got Hamas, and maybe Hamas gets destroyed, but all these people are just bombed to hell. There's going to be a radical group that forms out of them and becomes the next ISIS. Literally becomes the next ISIS. I know everybody's saying Hamas is ISIS now, but it's like you're creating more terrorists with this policy, just genocide policy.
And it's evil.
You're going to create terrorists, quote unquote terrorists, whatever the fuck that means, but you're going to create random violence provocateurs from all sides now. Whether they're.
Well, and when we say we create terrorists, it's a very one-sided way of us being told that. And because I feel we are terrorists, United States of America. We have 800 bases worldwide and we terrorize the world.
Oh, we are. I think we are. But I also don't even want to qualify them as terrorists. I just call them tyrannical.
But you know what I mean? Like, we put all the words mean nothing. That's the thing, you know? Oh,
that's what we were trying to say earlier in the episode. Like, the words and the arguing about words at some point. No, we just got to be like, this, you got to call wrong, wrong.
Wrong, exactly. Evil is evil.
Ground. Throw it on the ground.
Trash.
Trash. Trash panda. Actually, no, trash pandas are cool. We like trash pandas.
We do.
So there is another aspect to this ghoulery and tomfoolery, because we're speaking about how we're spending money here, right? Now, Northampton, the most progressive place in Massachusetts, I say for the third time, I'm saying that for a reason, because that's what they tout themselves as, because they do have things called Northampton Crisis Response Teams, right? So MassLive, notorious corporate rag that brainwashes Massachusetts people, has an article titled, "Has Northampton's crisis response team become a police alternative? Question mark. Not yet." And it basically is like, it describes what the department does. The Department of Division of Community Care, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a support team that responds to certain calls formerly dealt with by the city's police. And they walk. So they're mostly downtown, I presume. It's mostly to deal with people in crisis, people who are houseless or maybe
I wish they did have like a way to go. Not walking though, actually.
Because of budgets.
Yeah, Northampton's a larger area, actually.
Remember when this was finally through knuckle dragging
Oh, I remember.
2 years ago to actually fund it, they, the outside consultants, all the things are saying you need like $1 million to $1.2 million for it to start. And then you need to expand, you know, to spend more. They started them off with like
They're like,
400.
here's 300,000. Yeah, I think it was like
It's
four.
half. And
It wasn't good.
hamstrings you from the get-go. And it's like, well, and now you can be like, well, it didn't really work because we've spent 2 years throwing dick all at this. And I'm gonna quote Ron Swanson. All right. You don't half-ass two things, you whole-ass one thing. So you don't give your whole ass to the cops and then throw pennies at the fucking Division of Community Care, which you're trying to take a load off. And you're also starting a division or a department. Like, that's going to inherently cost more upfront.
Well, yes, and I think anyone saying like it doesn't work, it's like it's been 2 years. The
And it
cops
was
do
underfunded.
the cops the yes, and the cops cost the city $75,000 just recently. Like, does that mean they don't work?
And since the
Like, these are
Division of
conversations I'd love to have with someone arguing the cops work.
Community Care, who maybe they could be translators and they could have showed up when Marisol from Holyoke was beaten in Northampton on King Street.
Well, and for me that I don't like that's why I wish they were in cars because
Could have
the
met up.
cops just rolled up on her. Yeah.
They could have maybe even translated. Maybe with their.
Right, exactly, if they were out.
And like maybe they can dismiss, you know, they can handle the situation.
Why can't they have the old cop cars
The
that the
fuck?
cops need new ones like every fucking year?
Right. Sure.
There's like gotta be ways. There's gotta be ways. That's my issue with all of it.
And because of the white man's colonialism, and how all our systems run, that's why we need to literally abolish the system. Like you can't
Yeah.
inside the rules because they're all set up in ways with these contracts are written. A lot of this stuff is contractual. So like, yeah, we can't use the old cop cars because they were on lease or some stupid shit. And
It's like then we don't want those cop cars.
then you're paying higher for lease, but because the maintenance is done, you know, or you could have a maintenance department that run that fixes your fucking, you could invest on the tools themselves that way down in the long run. Everything is so short-sighted and overlapping contracts and overlapping systems that are that with third party independent private companies that these governments rely on, like you can't undo it. Like it's like this impossible puzzle to reverse engineer.
Yeah, we need new departments. We need new systems.
And like,
That's why this department should get the funding it needs.
right. In a place like Holyoke, for example, like we have municipal water, electricity. So we're almost there. We could have municipal internet. Like, I'm not, I'm, don't quote me on this, but I'm assuming because you have access, you're controlling the electrical lines, you have enough infrastructure to take care of the internet,
No,
right?
they could do it because, like, Leverett has their own town internet. You can do
They
it.
had a
It's
start from
expensive.
scratch. Like they had to build up,
Yeah, it's
have
expensive.
infrastructure already. And we actually have the trucks to actually go out and install the shit. Like, because they need the
Right.
trucks to maintain the stuff, to go fix poles and whatever you got to do. Like, all that stuff is already built in. So it's so frustrating why you don't make that investment, right? And like you're saying,
Well,
police, why don't we take half their budget, give it to the new Department of Community Care, and also with half that budget, we're taking half your assets. So that means your vehicles are coming with us and you
that's
out.
what I'm, yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe you can keep them so that the back is more comfortable. It can be an actual seat instead of a bench. And you could also maybe protect the fucking driver from somebody potentially, you know, for everybody's safety so that nobody can interfere with the driver. But like, I don't know. Hopefully they're not putting a lot of people in the back of their car if they're doing the job right.
Yeah, I just don't understand how we keep moving forward as a society and think, oh, we don't have money to like house the homeless, or we don't have money to do this or that of dollars for evil war or for police. And we don't really. So like I just don't understand how And our audience are they are not these people, and they probably wondered the same thing. I don't understand how it's not the norm that we question how our tax dollars are used.
Right. And, you know, wherever there's a soft spot in whatever community's politics you may live in, wherever there's a way, okay, maybe police reform isn't going to happen if you live in Weymouth, Massachusetts.
Yes, but take whatever funds you can to use them for good, do
Yo,
it.
if everybody's sick of paying Comcast, radicalize them around that. Like, there are way everybody has their thing that they're secretly a socialist about and they don't even know it. So, like, if your community has a strong sense of, like, no, we really like this, they're fucking us, Comcast or whoever, you know, because, like, you hear about that stuff. That's people do rally around that stuff. So, even if it's that, like, getting the community to control the means of the infrastructure we need instead of letting third parties do it, like, any way you can, that's a way to rebel. Like, it doesn't have to be all about police and military. You know, we got to rebel in any ways we can.
No, absolutely. Even just knowing that you do not need to be afraid of your neighbors and connecting with people in your community to the point where you understand and know what's going on, you keep yourself safe. The police really don't prevent crime.
No, they just steal the monies.
Yeah, so I mean, I think we all know that all cats are beautiful. That's why we're here today and always.
Oh, all cops are bastards. Cops can't come, everybody. Just letting you know, scientific fact. That's why they're so angry.
Science.
Science. Explain the anger. Explain it.
Well, I mean, there's so many things I could say, but I'm not going to get into
Explain the frustration they have
it.
based on their choices.
Oh.
The weed out does not like cops. Fuck y'all. But if you have a friend that likes hearing about cats, and please tell them about this episode. And as always, we'll link the Ghoulery and Tomfoolery in the episode notes, so to get the links to those articles, so you can see how the police are fucking up our communities on a micro level. I recommend reading Dusty's article from the Shoestring. And if you want to read the rag, Mass Live, go ahead. The headline is just as dumb as the article. But they're laying the groundwork to fucking sabotage it, just like always, just like everything else. This is the long game. It's dribs and drabs, turn public opinion. So that's why the weed out exists. Because we feel like we got to, push gas. Push back against the bullshit. And yeah, what are our values and where's our money being spent?
And you're right, that is why I think we exist, in the many ways, because we are not going to stop talking about this. So we felt like we would like to speak to people other than just those that know us. And I guess when I say that to our audience, we both have family members that, or people in our lives in the past that would disagree potentially with our values. But I also have people in my life personally, and I can let you speak for yourself, Spencer, but like that have over time with speaking to me about some of these things come to a place where they agree that they can't believe their tax dollars are spent this way and they wish there were alternatives. And I think talking about stuff and learning about things together is so important. And thank you, Spencer, for always being someone I really enjoy learning about the community, and even when it's upsetting, then sharing that information with the audience. And thank you for always doing that with me.
Thank you for being my co-host. Couldn't do it without,
Anytime.
can't do it without you. Can't do it without
Same. That's what I was trying to say.
you. I mean, I'll keep yelling without you. I mean,
I know you will, and I would keep talking about stuff too.
that part of.
I think that's why it's important for us to have people on. Usually, like, it's not usually just like us talking, and we usually don't necessarily focus on cats. But I think people need to know that if for us, like, please, even within your own echo chambers and whatever, friend groups and family, you don't want to put yourself in a position of harm. But talking about things is important. Learning about new things will help you broaden your worldview, and this isn't for our audience, but sometimes sharing that information, like you all may know these things, but sometimes sharing that information will make someone like your mother or father, or grandfather or older uncle be more open to some of these things. And they may not believe all cats are beautiful, but they may decide, you know, I don't want my tax dollars being spent that way. Like, I will vote with you on this. So I think that's important to remember. And it's something that's really uplifting when you think about it in terms of, personally, I think there are a lot of older people that would understand and agree that they wouldn't, they want to get something out of their tax dollars from their community. And I think sometimes learning about all that goes on and things in our community that are happening makes it easier for us to understand where that money actually is going to.
Yeah. Couldn't have said it better myself, my friend. But, you know, that's what we got to going on at the Weed Out. We talk about the minutiae in ways that hopefully you can relate to. And we are unfiltered in our beliefs and our values. We're not trying to manipulate you. We're not here to sell you anything. It's kind of the game with being anti-capitalist. It's about speaking your truth and living your truth. And it's not about anything other than getting the word out about workers organizing, talking about specific incidents with local governments and police, pointing out issues with local media framing, any of that. That's what Joanne and I are here to do, and we love hearing from our community. And always feel free to reach out to us, DM us on the social medias. You can go to our website, get links to everything at www.theweedout.com, you know, or you can go to our social media and there's a link tree in all the bios, and you can click on the link tree and get to any access us anywhere. And we're just here to keep weeding out the nonsense and the bullshit, and, you know, talk about any way, all the ways you can be a revolutionary. It exists in every moment. And if that means, yeah, right now we're going to talk about cats, and we're going to talk about how they're revolutionary and how they make me feel as a human being, and animals in general, how they make me feel. We're not focusing on profit. We're not, like, at that moment, we're not focusing on productivity. We're not we're just living in appreciating. That's an act of revolution. That's why art is considered an act of revolution, because it's not devoting your every moment to productivity and worth. It's about experiencing. It's about creating. So just another way to, you know, be a revolutionary, I guess. Your every act you can have. So if you're tempted to monetize your hobby, for example, don't do it, because you'll hate your hobby. You can't turn it into a productivity thing. What do you think?
You're right. You're so right. But like a younger version of me was like the person that wanted to monetize like every hobby that I had. I was like, you know, type A, like monetize everything. But because I need money to survive in this capitalistic hellscape. You know what I mean?
So no shame.
No shame to anyone who wants to or does do that. Because I've been there. Because I've been there, but I think you're so right.
Right. Yeah. You're a musician. That's not what I mean. Like, I'm not saying, but like when you decide, like, you today, if you're a musician that plays on TikTok and has a TikTok creator account, and you just decide, you know, today I'm going to play songs I want to play as opposed to requests, you're allowed to do that too. You know, so like, that's not what we mean by don't monetize, but also be careful about when you do stuff like that. Just don't let your, we do need money, but we also have to keep it in perspective that that's the advantage they have over us if we succumb to that's the only way to live, because there is other ways. And just keep weeding out the bullshit, like everybody, you know. So thank you, everybody, and catch you next time.
Yeah, stay well, take care.